to just take it up a little bit by degrees, to receive with meekness, with gladness, what your word offers, not by might or power, not by a man and his communication skills, nor his knowledge of the word, but what your spirit offers today through a vessel. Let us all, God, receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to deliver our souls. Praise you for this time. Praise you for this peaceful setting, this healthy church. May we all receive of this grace together. Amen. Waiting winners. More on waiting, huh? Great. Everybody likes waiting, right? Well, in actuality, I mean, we've had a few messages on waiting. We had like three or so in the series. And then this is a little bit more on that. And in some respects, these messages are helping to give you a practical way of waiting, just waiting through the series. Want to get to something else, right? We definitely need some help in this matter because the concept of or the discipline of waiting and winning does not necessarily go together in our culture. That is not something that our culture would see as, yeah, the people who wait are the people who win. In our culture, winning is more often than not associated with waiting. Winning is like taking advantage of seizing the day, getting rich fast. You snooze, you lose. The first that get in line are considered the winners. And so this idea of waiting and winning just don't go together, even though from God's perspective they are very much correlated. Not 100%. Not trying to draw out a formula here that all the winners always wait and all the people who wait always win. But it does tend in that direction, as we'll see. So we live in a society that's dominated by rushing, speed, and then often subsequent regret. How many of you have ever made a purchase and you kind of moved a little bit too quickly? Of course, it was the greatest deal ever. And then you had this thing called buyer's what? Buyer's remorse. Anybody ever experienced buyer's remorse? Now, on the little things, you can get away with it, but when it's like a vehicle or when it's a house, that's kind of where the regret factor will linger for a good season. But that's our society. It's dominated in so many ways, in so many facets, by rushing, by speeding, and we've got all this technological help to assist in that, and of course financial help in the form of credit. And low interest rates, oh, 0%, it's a gift from God. Well, which God are you talking about? Because I don't know if it's a gift. But welcome to an era of exigency. Everybody's new favorite word. Somebody say exigency. Let's define our term. This is the best way to describe this the culture that we live in. Now, exigency is basically urgency. Need for immediate attention and action. Our culture is basically oriented and is drunken, is intoxicated. It's like we're so used to it. You know, we're a caffeinated, carbonated society, espresso, you know, exigency. And we're so used to it, we have a hard time distinguishing that through most of human history, exigency was not the way people operated. But today, it's just like, you know, fast, quick, rush, and the urgency, need for immediate attention and action. Let me give you some examples. When's the last time, and let's just think of marketing for a moment. When's the last time you've heard, hurry, sale ends today? So that's a form of exigency. Interest rates will never be this low again. I mean, it's been about 10 years or so that the Fed's been playing the interest bait and trap game where just keep manipulating the interest rate, don't let market forces do what they do, but manipulate it just to keep the consumer addiction going. It's been going on, and I hear this, I've heard it many times, interest rates will never be this low again. And it's like, man, how low can they go? Can they go into negative territory? So there's always a refi, keep it going. How about this, hurry while supplies last? Oh, I better get there. There's only a limited number. Or something like this, you're not getting any younger, so, you know, do it now. Sometimes, I like sites like Amazon where you can read the feedback. Anybody read feedback for products? I think it's great. But often you get a sense, and I even get drawn into this exigency. It's like with this product, you get feedback like, run, don't walk, buy this right now. Or don't think about it. Stop thinking, push buy button right now. I mean, people are, they're giving this feedback. It's like, wow, if it's that good and I don't want to miss this deal, so I better, you know, seize it, get it while the getting's good. Or even like in the financial realm, like with precious metals, gold and silver, you know, it's buy on the dip. It's going to this low point, so buy it now. And then if it's going up, buy it on the climb. I mean, it's like whether it's going down or it's going up. You know, translation, the agent or the dealer is getting an override, so just keep buying. But for you, you know, you've got to get it while it's getting to this low point. Get it right now or get it on the way up. And then we see it also in politics, unfortunately, this idea of exigency where huge bills are passed, 1,000-page, 1,500-page bills are passed, and they're just rushed. And you hear a line like this, and you just, you do it like, what? We have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. Now, if I had not heard that with my ears, I'd have said, no, someone's making that up, or that's from some comedy movie. But no, even in political circles, you get this exigency, this, we got to move right away. It's red alert. And the regret that comes, I would say that a good 50% of that which is negative, that which is problematic in our society is some way correlated with exigency, correlated with rushing. You know, getting married too fast, or having the children before marriage, buying when you should not have, and you know, purchasing instead of saving, all these things, being ruled by exigency, and then having to deal with the consequences, having to deal with the collateral damage. You know, play now, pay later. But when you pay later, the price is much higher. But for God's people, we've got an alternative. In Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31, it says, but they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God's people, they go through times of difficulty and struggle. They deal with lack and uncertainty and anxiety, just like anybody else. Advantage, though, to the one who waits for the Lord, then renewal comes. Not those who rush ahead and try to cope in their own ways, but they wait on the Lord, renewal comes. True strength, the breath of fresh air comes. They get the second wind of the Spirit, if you will. And in beautiful language, they mount up with wings like eagles. They get this perspective. They get this help. They see the big picture view. And they're able to soar and to experience blessing and coverage. Now look, you know, you might have thought, which I probably would have thought if I was in your seat, because I think in hypercritical ways, well, of course, stick-in-the-mud Pastor Ron is going to be talking about waiting and going slow. Well, it's not always about being idle and just you know, being slow. It says they shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. You can run. You got times where there's speed that is needed, but if it's in God, if you've done it in context to God and being covered by Him, you can run and you won't be wearied. And you can walk and not faint. The different paces of life, you can take each one as they come. The people that wait on the Lord are blessed. Ultimately, they're the winners. Now, as I've said, we live in a pressurized world that's replete with rushing regrets. Let's get an example of this. 1 Samuel chapter 13, verses 5 through 14. A time of distress, and we'll see a man who was given to rushing. A man that had not, nor did he ever, learn to wait upon the Lord. And the regret factor that followed. In verse 5 of 1 Samuel 13, we get the context, and the Philistines mustered to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and troops like the sand of the sea, or sand on the seashore, in multitude. They came up and encamped at Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven. So you've got this horde, you've got this pressure, kind of how life is often for us. You got all these concerns, and you try to fix one thing, and two other things break down. Well, you got this huge army there. They're like the sand on the seashore in multitude. A lot of pressure coming to bear against the people of God here. Verse 6, when the men of Israel saw that they were in trouble, for the people were hard-pressed, think pressure, the people hid themselves in caves and in holes and in rocks and tombs and in cisterns. Some Hebrews crossed the fords of the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. Saul was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. So these are tough times. These are perilous times, to say the least. A lot of pressure. Now, do you experience pressure often enough in this life, different ways? I mean, I believe that as time goes along, pressure is going to increase upon everybody. And even Jesus said, unless the days have been shortened, no flesh would survive. For the sake of the very elect, God will somehow abbreviate the end times. And of course, our ultimate relief is Jesus Christ and his return. But in the here and now, just think about pressure. Think about various concerns. And you think about your children. If you have more than one child, you know, you got this child's concern and then that child's concern. And then if you're a grandparent, you know, the concerns will start to multiply. Each person will bring a degree of concern, and you just got pressure. And as you grow older, it's like your prayer list gets bigger and bigger. You know, wouldn't it be nice if I could just chalk some of these off and everything was stabilized and made right? And but pressures just grow. I mean, even just a small practical matter, just walking around my house, maybe you've had this experience, not my house, but your house, but you go from room to room, this needs fixing, and you just start, every room, it's like, how can it be in every single room? And then you go outside, and so even your house becomes, if you've got a perfectionist mentality, it becomes a pressurized potential in your life. And it can almost be overwhelming. It can almost like just paralyze you. It's like, man, where do you start? And here, you know, to a much more significant concern, the hordes of the Philistines are upon the people of Israel. And they're hard pressed, and so they're hiding themselves in the caves and the holes. And some are even retreating to the east, going across the Jordan River. And here's Saul, and he's the leader, and the people are all trembling. It's not a picture of comfort and stability. Verse 8, he waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul said, bring the burnt offering here to me and the peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering to the Lord. As soon as he had finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and to greet him. Now, this is not a pleasant meet and greet here, by the way, like we just had earlier. Saul offered this sacrifice, which was the prerogative of Samuel. He committed an unauthorized action here. Here we see Saul operating not by faith, but by fear. He's the leader, and his army's trembling, and people are starting to disperse. He's getting nervous. It seems like I've waited long enough, and now it's time for me to take action. Now it's time for me. You know, I'm not getting any younger. things aren't going to get better unless I get in here and interject myself. And so he commits what is an obvious unauthorized action. It is not of God. And so Samuel comes, verse 11, Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash, I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." Now here, Saul assumes that some type of religious action, some type of experience, though unauthorized, will pacify and bring about the will of God. But in actuality, now listen carefully, in actuality, the mundane, perhaps boring work of waiting was the will of God. And had he had just waited, there would have been no fanfare, no drama, nothing flashy. Nothing that would have kept his army, perhaps, from in his eyes, from being secure. If he had just waited, though, and done God's will, then good things would have followed. But instead, he sought by an unauthorized action, something that God was not in. Now, we can also perhaps think back in times past, in Genesis, where God had told and promised Abraham and Sarah that you're going to bear a child. And unfortunately, there was a season that they did not want to wait through. And so what happened? They said, well, we're going to take this into our own hands. Enter Hagar. Enter Ishmael. Enter years of regret after that. God did not disown Abraham and Sarah. Isaac eventually came. Joy came in the morning. Laughter came. However, an unauthorized event cost them much. Much regret followed. And this unauthorized action of Saul, it may have seemed like the right thing. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is death. This seemed right in his own eyes to bring stability, but it was not authorized by God. He's operating by fear, not by faith. Faith was not just calling something invisible and making it so. Faith was just accepting that this is God's way, and I'm going to wait even against what I'm seeing by sight. I'm going to obey God. Faith is just obedience, and it's waiting. That was what Saul lacked here. Instead, he let fear and the urgency of the matter control him. And Samuel just lays it on him here. Verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, "You've done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, for then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue." Now, how many of you, like me in times past, perhaps in times present, have read that, heard that, and you say, man, that just seems like a huge punishment for what seems like a small matter or for one infraction? Anybody ever honestly ever think that? That's okay. That's kind of the way you can take it. It's like, man, that's such a sweeping punishment for what seems like his first infraction as a king. But see, God sees everything at once. God sees this man in the present tense, and he sees all of his future. And what we see when we continue to follow the career of Saul is a man that is not given to waiting, is a man that rushes ahead, that acts with arrogant presumption, that is suspicious and paranoid and insecure. And so he doesn't have a discipline to wait, to think something through, to not just assume the worst. But instead, we see a man given to spears, fears, and witchcraft. Saul, in his career, we'd see him at times when he got angry. He didn't know how to count to 10. Instead, he took his spear and threw it at David. Or he took his spear and threw it at his son Jonathan and said, "You son of a perverse woman." We see him in his career filled with fears, so filled with insecurity, so paranoid, that he would wipe out a bunch of priests that he assumed had conspired with David, and then would go and exterminate their whole city. He put the city of Nod to the sword and killed men, women, and the infants. A city of Israel is his rash, presumptuous, angry way of life. We see Saul at the end of his life. Saul is far gone from God. The spirit had removed itself from Saul, and a wicked spirit had filled that place, was tormenting Saul. And at the end of the eve of his the last day of his life, we see Saul consorting with a witch, and just so desperate to make some sense of what's happening and to get some counsel that he goes to the witch at Endor, and he's consulting witchcraft. And this man is rushing, you know, like modern day witchcraft could be associated with drugs and even astrology and such. You want to rush and get a coping mechanism. I need to cope with life, so I need something to numb me. Or I need, what do the stars say? I just need a quick answer. Give me, and all of that is wickedness. Well, that's Saul. He didn't learn to wait upon the Lord so that his strength could be renewed. But he was a man given to rushing and presumption. Hence, God disqualified him early on, because God, who knows all things, could see a man that would not take a break, would not think it through, would not learn to respond instead of reacting, and would always be a little bit animalistic, living by his instincts and his first thoughts. And so now Saul is disqualified, and his name lives in infamy. Now contrast Saul here with a great man of God. Unlike Saul, the prophet Habakkuk, which actually I spoke about a few weeks back, the prophet Habakkuk resisted the urge to rush. If you read the short little book of Habakkuk, you get a prophet that is complaining and very upset with God. As a matter of fact, in Habakkuk chapter 1, twice he accuses God of being idle / lazy / you're not doing anything. Yeah, that's pretty presumptuous, isn't it? You ever had those thoughts, by the way? You're in good company. Habakkuk, a great prophet. He was perplexed in his day. He had fear and frustration, but he had at least this much sense. He positioned himself in a stationary stand. Look at Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. After a chapter of complaining and accusation, and why won't you act, why this, why that, he says, I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out and see what he will say to me, and I will answer concerning my complaint. Wow, if we could just learn from that principle right there. He had said his piece. He had allowed the anger and the disappointment to go vertical. He vertically vented, if you will. And you can read that later in the first chapter. But it's not about departing. It's not about, well, now I'm going to go follow the gods of Baal or the gods of Babylon because it seems to be working for them. I'm not going to sell out God here. I'm not going to look for an extramarital relationship to make me happy, or I'm not going to look for a new home or some new hobby to get me out of this mode. You know, God's obviously not helping me, and so I'm going to move on. No, not Habakkuk. He's going to take his stand at his watchpost, and he's going to wait upon the Lord. Now, our lead verse is very helpful. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They'll mount up. They'll get a better perspective of life. They'll run and won't be weary. They'll walk and not faint. Verse 2 is awesome. And the Lord answered me. See, I waited. I chose to take the stand, my stand. I chose to be at my post. I didn't depart my post. I didn't just up and quit. So many people up and quit. They think if I just remove myself from a marriage, or if I just remove myself from this job or from my ministry, if I just have change, then things will get better. But Habakkuk, he stayed there, and at his post, notice it says, my watch post, the place where he's supposed to be. He's a watcher in his day. A watcher was like a seer or a prophet, someone that understood revelation and then could communicate it. I'm not going to leave that place, but I'm going to stay. I'm going to keep my eye to the sky. I'm going to keep my ear inclined towards him. I'm upset. I have my doubts. Maybe God has forsaken. Maybe he is lazy. You know, but I'm not going to just stay there. I'm going to hear from God. And God's faithful. God answers him. That's like those times where you've been upset, where you've been at wit's end, where you've been in a low point. And you chose, instead of just vegging out with 8 hours of TV or just trying to go on the internet and just try to cope that way. Instead, you got in your word and you took time and you've got those times. If you've had any time in the Lord and you've grown, you've got those dynamic moments where God spoke to you. Maybe you've got them highlighted. You've got those underlined and you even put a date by it. This is when I was so upset, so down, so frustrated, but I at least had enough sense. Now, I'm not saying that we always do, but the message is to help us to go in that direction. I at least had enough sense to take a seat, to take a stationary position, and to wait to hear from the Lord. I'm not just going to up and depart this marriage. I'm not going to just say, forget it. You kids want to be like that? Hands off. I want nothing to do with you. And when you get in junior high, maybe we'll talk again. But I'm not just going to give up. I'm not just going to say, well, you know, it's the church's fault. And so I'm going to go seek out another church because I need to find that perfect church. Well, no, I take a stationary stand. There are times of change, of course. But those who tend to take the stationary stand, they will hear from the Lord. They'll receive a blessing just for waiting. It's like the difference between the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Elijah. The prophets of Baal, you know, activity, exigency, cutting ourselves, dancing about. Baal, you know, make it happen. Kind of some superstitious type of thing, some humanistic effort. But Elijah's a little bit different. Douse the sacrifice 7 times, simple prayer. He had learned to wait upon the Lord at the brook. He had learned what it was like to be in the mundane place of devotion all through his career. And then when the time came at the right time, simple prayer, doesn't have to make a spectacle. And there's a consummation. The answer of God comes, and it speaks volumes, not only to him, but to other people. Now look at this in verse 2. And the Lord answered me, and this is awesome. Write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. Habakkuk, I have allowed you to experience these frustrations in this season. And you've had enough sense to take it easy, to take a break, to learn to wait, to go through the excruciating process, very different than our culture and society, but to go through the excruciating process of waiting upon me. Now, here's your flood of revelation. Write this down. Make it plain on tablets. You see, as a prophet, he was charged to communicate the oracles of God to the people. And not only was he going to be blessed here, but also other people were going to be blessed. You know, there's a difference with Saul. There's collateral damage. He dies, his sons die, and Israel is confused for a season. But with Habakkuk, there's collateral benefit. Not only does he receive a relief in terms of revelation, but then other people are going to read what he put down on those tablets. And now they're strengthened to run. Those wearied people, those hurting people, they would be recharged and they could run who would read it. You know, it's kind of like what we experience here in this gathering. When somebody chooses to wait upon the Lord, when somebody says, you know, it would be easy enough. I do have enough biblical knowledge. I can speak rather clearly, and I could just subscribe to 500 sermons and just have all the Sundays covered, and wouldn't that just be great? You know, the flesh would just love that ease and laziness. But that's to me, that's an abomination. To me, the better way is choosing to wait upon the Lord. You know, I've got these ideas, but God, I want you to bring forth something. And then I wanna write it down on tablets. You know, cut and paste, whatever, but I want it to be on tablets, and then other people can hear it. And they came in weary, just like I've been weary, but I waited. And then they come in weary and they read it, they hear it, and they can go out with like a second wind, with like, yeah, perspective, I can make it. I can keep going. You know, and that's an example here, but in our families, fathers and mothers, you know, you have to be waiting upon the Lord and receiving so that you can give to your family so you can be a blessing. You've got those children for just a little window of opportunity. And it's gross negligence to just assume that we outsource for our children's revelation when God has charged you, fathers and mothers, caretakers of a pastoral stewardship, to impart to those children while you have the brief window of opportunity. And time, it does go by fast with those kids. Dave, would you say it went by fast with your three kids?
Sure did.
Whoa, poor guy. Joel, did it go by fast?
Yeah.
I mean, it flies. And so while you've got those children, to be waiting yourself, not rushing about, scurrying to activity, being overcome with the exigency, influence of our culture, but learning to wait and do some simple things like a once a week Bible devotional, or making sure your teenagers and youth group, for goodness sake, just doing those simple things slowly, steadily, and surely, then they, over time, they hear and they read those things, and they become spiritual people that can run who read it. Are y'all following this, by the way? This is good stuff. Revelation, look what he receives. He receives revelation, people can read it, and they can start running themselves. Now there is indeed a time to run, but it must be in God's way. This is the process. You must go my way. You must wait upon me first and foremost. Make sure that I'm satisfied. Make sure that devotion goes to me first. Then I will rain down upon you. Then you will be blessed. The lesser must bless the greater. You bless the greater first. You wait upon him. That is a form of worship. You know, we think in worship in so many different terms, but certainly waiting has to be a form of worship that gets God's attention. Something special. You know, you can be like the prophets of Elijah, cutting yourself and trying to make things happen. But that one that's waiting, I bet God has a lot more regard for that person, as he did for Habakkuk here. Key point. Those who tend to wait tend to win. Nothing is 100%. We like to have easy formulas, but the predilection is, the tendency is, that when you wait, you will experience victory. When you rush, when you try to do it yourself, you're going to have an Ishmael. And that doesn't mean you're disqualified from the kingdom. You're just going to have something to bear for the rest of your life. Let's finish out with some considerations. Waiting winners, number one, serve the Lord faithfully. Therefore, my beloved, be steadfast, sedentary. When's the last time you had a spiritual advisor say, I want you to be very sedentary? I want you just to almost appear like there's no activity. Just no, because we think winning and progress is evident movement, is energetic, something that can be seen by the natural eye. Be sedentary, immovable, always abounding. It's almost like a paradox. Sedentary, immovable, but you're abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that the Lord, that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. I want to encourage you today. You've been faithful. You have been faithful in few things, as Jesus gave the illustration. You've been sedentary. You know, I've got fruit trees, And I have this assumption that fruit will come if the tree stays where it's at. I'm pretty smart, aren't I? To put it another way, there might not be much fruit if the tree is moving out of place, like away from where it was. I'll just assume there's not going to be a lot of fruit. Now, I know it's not all that exciting, but it is the way of God. Root down deeply, bear fruit upward. It's not about just, you know, maintaining status quo and don't make any changes. It's not about that. But the way of God, if you serve faithfully in what he's given you to do, well, what has he given me to do? Well, if you're a born-again Christian, if you're brought into the family of God, then you are a person to bring worship to God. You give yourself to God. You serve him. Hopefully you serve him with gladness. If you're married, be steadfast, immovable, abounding in the work. Yeah, but you don't understand my wife. You had a wife like mine. You don't understand my husband. Yeah, I know that. I mean, it's not easy. But be steadfast. Be faithful where God has put you. And that's the work of God for you. You've got children. You're in school right now. I'm in high school. I can't wait to get out. Because then life will be so much better, right? Right, everybody who's graduated from high school? You're in your parents' house. I can't wait to get out of my parents' house because, man, then it's going to be good, right? I mean, mortgages pay for themselves, right? There's no Ameren bills out there. It's only in your parents' house, right? Wherever God has you now, be steadfast. Put your hand to the plow and be immovable. I am going to serve God with gladness in this season because it is a season. It will change, but in this season, abounding in the work of the Lord. Where does God have you? In your church family. If you're not serving in your church family and you're a member here, you need to pray about that. Lord, where can I be a contributor? Where can I be a blessing? Because I guarantee that once you give in that direction, the blessings will really come back upon you in greater ways. You cannot outgive God in that respect. Serving the Lord in your sphere of influence, on the job, that is your mission field. Serving the Lord, immovable, steadfast, and abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, everything you do in God, everything that you do by faith, I am serving in this marriage as unto the Lord. I am serving in this time of parenting as unto the Lord. I am serving on the job as unto the Lord. Whatever you do in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. Might not always be exciting, but it's not vanity. On the flip side, the most exciting lifestyles, the lifestyles of rich and famous, the most exciting, fun, glamorous lifestyles that are outside of God are ultimately futility. Solomon lived the lifestyle of the rich and the famous. He violated God's precepts in so many ways. And at the end of his days, he's filled with what? Starts with an R. Regret. Just read Ecclesiastes. You'll get a sense of that. Waiting winners, number one, serve the Lord faithfully. Secondly, they operate in the obvious will of God. Here's so many that you know, I want to know what the will of God is. What's the will of God for my life? It's always in mystery terms. It's a mystery. It's way out there. It has something to do with the future, and it has something to do with often a change of geography. It's got to be away from here. The mystery will of God as it is pursued and thought of. What is the mystery? I'm just waiting for God to lead me into his perfect will, what he has for me. Well, how about this? How about just operating in the obvious will of God? Because you only live today anyway. You don't live tomorrow, right? If you get to that tomorrow, it'll be a today. That'll be the obvious will of God. I know, these are just brilliant things, aren't they? I mean, a tree has to stay still to produce fruit. All right, let's check this out. 1 Corinthians 7. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Now, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this, had a lot of responsibility. He was over many different local churches, many that he had established, some that he hadn't. But he wrote to these churches. He was very pastoral. He cared for them. Often enough, when you read the epistles, there's some universals, some things that he has to deal with each one. The hugest one is love. I know you're going to be shocked, but in every local church, there was a challenge to love people at times. Every local church, there was a challenge to love, and so the Apostle Paul, greatest of these is love. See to it that you love, you know, over and over. Well, here is another thing that he says, you know, wherever I go, I got to deal with people's discontentment. And these are born-again Christians. I don't know if you saw that. Let me read it again. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This I have to make this a rule for every church, because in every church, the same thing, it's like there's no new thing. People get dissatisfied quickly with where they're at. They get discontented. Worse yet, some of them turn into malcontents, and they become cancerous. So I have to make sure everybody hears this rule. It might not be the golden rule, but let's call it the silver rule. This is my rule in all the churches. Do you think from time to time you might need a reminder? Have you ever experienced discontentment? Oh, I'm so spiritual, I'm never discontented. Okay. I'll just have you come pray for me after service. That'd be wonderful. No, it's in our DNA to be discontented. That is directly from our father and mother, Adam and Eve. Discontentment, desire, disappointment. Well, that's in us. Even as Christians, we have the pearl of great price. We've tasted and seen that the Lord is good. But there still is, oh, son of Adam and daughter of Eve, there still is that there must be something more. I wonder what else, something beyond that hedge. Yeah, that would be good. Well, I have to make this a rule everywhere I go. I got to reiterate this. So, for example, not that this is too relevant for us, but was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the mark of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. For neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. Then he reiterates, each one should remain in the condition in which he is called. Were you a slave when called? Do not be concerned about it. Now, what are you? What is the obvious will of God? The obvious will of God is where God has you right now. It should not be assumed that because I'm not experiencing what I perceive to be the mystery will of God, something more, something better, something where my gifts and talents are used to a greater degree. You know, the mystery will of God that's out there, a change of time and geography. I should not assume that because I'm not there, that I'm not actually in the will of God. Each one should remain in the condition in which he is called. Now, see, I grew up in very progressive, you know, I got a strange combination, a born Catholic, first 7 years there, and then very what you would call charismatic, Pentecostal, progressive type of a dynamic feel. You've got to have something and have great faith and make it happen, and that's great. I'd rather err towards that. That's wonderful. God's drawn to faith. Don't get me wrong. But there was always with it this sense of, well, you don't measure up. You're obviously not spiritual enough. If there is not a service where tongues and interpretation happen, something was wrong with that service. The Spirit of God must not have been there. Really? I counted more than one of us. And wherever two or more are gathered. So, Spirit, wait a minute now. So, you know, where we're at right now, where God has us right now, to assume some mystery will, and I'm therefore lacking, and the enemy can, of course, fan that into flame too. Yeah, you're right, you are lacking, because he's the accuser. Man, I haven't been delivered of this yet. I'm still struggling. You know, 20 years later, I'm still battling this issue. The mystery will of God must be where it's at. Well, each one remain where God has you. God has you planted. He is working in his way and in his time and in his season. Your deliverance will come. Believe. Believe big. Believe for deliverance. Believe for healing. Believe for dynamic moves of God. Great. Those are wonderful things. But when those things don't necessarily come out as we would expect or anticipate, believe God where you're at. Believe that God is working, even though you may not sense it in your natural being. Each one should remain in the condition in which he is called. So were you a slave when called? Do not be concerned. Don't be anxious. Don't be anxious about the fact that I'm in this career that I don't quite like. I'm in this household that I'm not quite excited about. I'm not zealous. I just don't feel it. Well, good news. We walk by faith, not by sight. I don't feel energetic. I don't feel vibrant. I don't have a sense of anticipation. Look unto the Lord. Let the Lord be the one that you gain that from. And then let him work out things. Now look what he says here. Don't be concerned. See, we're talking about operating in the will of God. Waiting winners actually operate in the will of God. He goes on to say, but if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. Christians aren't just to say, okay, you know, nothing new, no opportunities, I'll just take life as it comes, que sera, sera. No, not just that. You don't limit yourself to that fatalism. If God allows there to be an open door of opportunity, and I'm not talking about something that you've made your open door of opportunity, you say, see what God's done. No, if God opens a door of opportunity, then he says, avail yourself of that opportunity. For he who is called in the Lord as a slave is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he who is free when called is a slave of Christ. Times of transition for God's people will make themselves clear. Don't try to force it. Operate in the obvious will of God. Be thankful for what is the obvious. Be thankful for the people. Be thankful for the position, the status, where God has you. Praise God for it. And then when God wants to bring transitions, because there will be a transition, that is a guarantee. Death is what makes that a guarantee. But short of that, transitions will come, and then let God speak to you in that season. Wait upon the Lord, bottom line. People who wait upon God are going to tend to be more victorious. Their families are going to experience more victory. Their children are going to have a much greater spiritual strength about them. And I want us all in here as much as possible. I mean, we are a Victory Christian Fellowship. I want us to experience the great victory. May not seem like the most exciting way, but waiting upon the Lord will increase that victory factor. You want to be victorious? Well, let's stand together if we could. Ask God to help us today. You know, at the very least, that we're not ruled by that, our new favorite word, exigency. Somebody say exigency. Well, we're not ruled by that the atmosphere of our society. Fast, rush, and then even spiritualizing it. But instead, taking God's rhythms and learning how to wait upon him. Father God, I just pray for relief for your people today, that as we have considered your good word, let us even take a time out. Let us etch out some time today and take these notes and give it a second look, and let your word have its profit in our hearts. Praise you that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And that today, Lord, you have given us nourishment. Let us go out with peace and joy. And I ask, Lord, that if there's some that may not know you, they've not yet cried out upon you for salvation, that you would call them near to yourself. They believe on you, Jesus Christ, and they'd be saved. Thank you for this time and your word today. In your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.